What is up, Pitcherless family? Welcome to another episode of Hacks and Jacks. I'm Brett Ford here with senior analyst Scott Chu. We're talking hitters on Pitcherless. Scott, we're back after a little bit of a hiatus. How are you and how are things?
Doing great. I feel bad we didn't have an episode last week. I know you were on vacation. I was getting prepared to do this podcast with a guest host, and my son's bed went through the subfloor in the corner of his room, thanks to a 60-year-old house and a couple bouts with termites. So that kind of fixing that, you know, I didn't even fix it all yet, but making that workable, I ended up taking up the evening. So I'm glad we're back this week. And I apologize for the sort of no message for folks, because on Thursday night we were ready, but then, you know, my subfloor just decided it didn't want to be a floor.
Yeah, home improvement stuff just happens at the worst time, doesn't it? Like, all the time.
The joys of home ownership. Like, for all the folks that are like buying a house because it's the right investment, you're probably right. But there is a certain joy in being able to say, hey, landlord, what the heck? Right? Because now, whenever that call is made, it's to me by my own family. Right? Like, it's like, hey, landlord, what the heck? Dad.
The call is coming from inside the house.
Coming from inside the house. It's to me.
Oh, man. Hey, at least it wasn't plumbing. Like, that's like the one solace.
Thanks for jinxing that. I really appreciate that.
No, don't put that evil on me. Let's talk about news and notes for this week. We'll jump right into some injury news. Julio Rodriguez, Seattle outfielder, out on the concussion IL. Zach Gieloff was reinstated from the IL last week, might be going back after a collision with the wall on Thursday. Connor Griffin, the Pittsburgh Pirates prospect, is headed to the IL for what looks like an extended period. And Mark Vientos, the Mets infielder, broke his hand. He's headed to the IL as well. Couple of impact bats here, Scott. Where are you going and what are you doing with these guys?
Yeah, so let's start with the last one you said with the Mets. So that's Vientos hitting the IL. Vientos was playing some, but not a ton. It was very on and off, mostly against lefties. The return of Jorge Polanco over the last week probably helps resolve some of that. So I think, you know, Brett Batty, who's been fine the last couple of days, he'll probably still get a little bit of time. And Jorge Polanco will help fill some of that gap as well. Jared Young should get a little bit of extra time. None of these guys are guys that I'm really caring about in 12 teamers, but in 15 team and deeper, maybe you care. Zach Gieloff, you know, that's a huge bummer. I saw that injury while I was watching the Tigers game. It didn't look great, but it, you know, it's a collision thing. It wasn't like a, you know, he twisted his knee and went down in like a heap. Like when I tore my ACL and MCL, it was more of like, he literally slid into the wall, like a big jut out on the wall in left field. So hopefully he's okay. If, you know, here's the thing. Some of the injuries that happen over this weekend, it may be a beat before these teams put them on the IL, because they're also kind of thinking like, will they be fine when we come back? Because I think, as we were talking about before the, you know, before we came on, it's not the 10 game IL, it's the 10 day IL, and 10 days from now, you know, they'll just be coming back from the All-Star break. So teams might be a little bit slow on that. With him out, I don't really think there's any, again, there's not really anything actionable there. There's no like players who would have been interesting, but that aren't, maybe the guy that's, you know, continues to be a streamer in very deep leagues that continues to get a shot is Joshua Kuroda Grower. I mean, he's, you know, he's been kind of interesting for deep leagues over the last couple of days. He's played some second, third, and short. So he's kind of filling that role that Gieloff had. I'm not interested in a 12 teamer, but he is still there if you're in a deep league and should continue to get playing time at least over the course of the weekend.
A handful of guys are back from the IL. So some good news around the major leagues. Athletics infielder Jacob Wilson is back from the IL. Texas Rangers outfielder Wyatt Langford. Athletics utility man Tyler Soderstrom. Los Angeles Angels outfielder Mike Trout. And Minnesota catcher Ryan Jeffers, all coming back from the IL. Trout, Langford, Soderstrom, Wilson, really all five of them actually are fantasy viable bats here, Scott. Are you going out of your way to, are you keeping these guys on your roster? Or are you cutting somebody to get, to make sure that these guys, when they come back from the IL, you have a spot?
Yeah, I think, you know, all of them are viable if you have that specific need. I think Jacob Wilson, especially in points league, is someone who I might be willing to go after. Whereas in a regular categories league, I'm like, meh, let's see if he hits it all or stays healthy. He's not really been able to do either of those with any kind of consistency. So that's a, you know, that's sort of there. I think, you know, there's a couple injuries sort of on the fringes of relevance. So like Trout coming back, that's a big deal, but it doesn't really displace anyone that you were using before. You're just kind of using Trout again and hoping that he stays healthy. A couple other names like Owen Casey for Miami, who'd been really hot as a lefty platoon bat. He hits the IL, but nobody of note kind of takes his place. Ryan Jeffers, of course, you know, the Minnesota catcher, he's like a streamable catcher, but I'm not really going out of my way to go and get Ryan Jeffers. It's more of a, you know, if I'm really desperate for a catcher, I'll give it a whirl. His line on the year has been really good, but he's only played 37 games so far. So like while he's hit .295 and slugged 541, his OBP is above 400. All that's great. He's played 37 games this year because he's just been hurt a ton, and being healthy has never been a strength of Ryan Jeffers. So, you know, that's worth noting. It's a weird time because like there's a couple guys getting activated right before the All-Star break. So Munetaka Murakami is probably the biggest one. We'll also see some guys come back like right after the break. So probably if Vinny Pasquantino isn't activated by the time you hear this, he's probably coming sometime over the weekend or as they start again over the break. Murakami obviously is a top 40 to 60 guy. So he'll be ranked somewhere in there. Pasquantino is the one I've gotten a couple questions about because I think he's on a couple of waiver wires. And what I would tell you is, in a points league, or if I'm desperate just for like a lotto ticket, then definitely I want to try to make some room. But when Pasquantino's back for sure, he's going to be in the last tier of the hitter list. He wasn't really ranked by the time he went, you know, I think I ranked him right before he went down because he was showing some signs of life. But even then, his slugging wasn't really that much higher than his OBP. He's not hitting the ball very hard. So Pasquantino isn't someone who I'm like just all in, like, oh yeah, this is a top 75 guy. This is like a back end, you know, first baseman where if you don't have one or you've recently lost a first baseman to injury, then you should target Pasquantino. Maybe if you've been rostering like Paul Goldschmidt, who had been very lucky for quite a while. We talked about it on the show a couple times where Pasquantino was really out hitting his Statcast metrics. And all of a sudden that has just totally fallen apart. I'd be fine with making that kind of swap, right? By the time the break's done, it's like, yeah, well, Goldschmidt didn't hit it all over this weekend. Vinny Pasquantino's out there. I'll make that kind of swap. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about. It's like, hey, I've got a slumping guy who was kind of lucky before and now just is nothing at all. I'll swap that for Pasquantino, but I'm not trying to cut like a legit starting first baseman for Pasquantino.
We'll move on to a trio of call-ups here. Some of them a little bit interesting for fantasy, more just kind of the relevant situations around them. The Dodgers call up catcher Eliezer Alfonso Jr., the Diamondbacks recall Tim Tawa back to the majors, and the Brewers call up Luis Lara. Any of these situations at all relevant for you, Scott?
You know, Tawa has shown some flashes here and there, but he no longer has consistent playing time and he's not really hitting that much right now. So I'm probably out on him. The Dodgers catcher, the only one I care about right now is Dalton Rushing. And when he comes back, Will Smith. And then the real question will be, how do these two guys get deployed, right? How much are they going to potentially split time? You know, is there going to be, you know, they are righty lefty, but I don't think it's going to be a pure platoon because Will Smith is a longtime veteran who has a long track record of hitting. Dalton Rushing is a young guy who's really just only kind of hitting waves. Like he has these two or three series where he's really, really good. And then it all kind of comes back down and he's very below average. So that's sort of a question. We knowing that the DH spot is just simply not available in Los Angeles. So, you know, we'll see how that goes. I think if you're, you know, I can't really imagine any format. I'm really trying to go after Eliezer Alfonso. He also wasn't a guy who, like, as far as I'm concerned, was very high on like prospect boards. He's been kind of average in the minor leagues. You know, he played 49 games this season in AAA and he had one home run. He was in the Tiger system for a couple of years prior to this, and he never really cracked their, you know, their catching ranks. They had a couple, you know, plus catching prospects, and Alfonso just never really shown, never really like shown bright in that kind of spot. So he's more of a back end option in very deep dynasty. But yeah, it's, I'm not sure how many call-ups we're going to get in the short term that are really going to move the needle. A lot of the big prospects coming into the year were already up. Like, there's a couple guys that are still out there, like Kalen Culpepper in Minnesota, a couple other like minor leaguers who have sort of set the world on fire a little bit. Josu DePaula, you know, Luis Lara is probably the big one over in Milwaukee, where he had been hitting well and he just got this big contract. At the same time, the Milwaukee outfield is already kind of crowded, and Lara wasn't like, he had a really, he had more walks and strikeouts in the minor leagues, and that was really good. He had a great WRC plus, and he had these 9 home runs, which is more than he'd hit in 2023, 2024, and 2025 combined. You know, he only hit 8 home runs across those 3 seasons. He had 9 so far this year in just 78 games. Is that, could that be a sign of a breakout? Sure. He also only has a 2.9% barrel rate in AAA, right? He spent the whole season so far in AAA. The exit velocity is low. The hard hit rate is low. The expected batting average is almost, you know, 85, 90 points lower than his actual batting average. The expected slugging is almost 150 points lower than his actual slugging. There's a lot of red flags on the luck metric side. Whereas like a lot of guys in AAA are a little luckier than their actual numbers, because there's, you know, there's a lot of like poor defense and a lot of things going on in the minors, but these gaps are enormous, right? Like 2.9% barrel rate in AAA in the majors, that looks like zero, right? Like, you don't get more barrels in the majors, generally speaking. So as much as Lara, you know, Lara got this extension and all that, but you still just wonder with him. It's like, how is he going to find any kind of consistent playing time, especially with Garrett Mitchell playing really, really well of late, Sal Frelick playing fairly well of late. I mean, he slowed down just over this last week, but he's shown some signs throughout the season. You've got Jake Bowers who can play the corner. And then of course you have Jackson Churio, who's, you know, an all-star. He's going to continue to play left field. Christian Yelich, if needed, could play the outfield. You just kind of wonder like how much room is there really for Luis Lara. And then again, there's even more pressure when like when Andrew Vaughn's hitting, that pushes, he's not right this second, but when that does, that pushes Jake Bowers out to the outfield sometimes. It's just going to be really crowded for Lara. So in a standard 12 team league, I'm not that interested. In dynasty, you know, you should certainly hold. Although even then, we're not talking about a guy who was like consensus top 100 prospect, right? He was kind of a fringe top 100 prospect at best. So don't spend too many resources just because he got the extension.
Perfect. That takes us to our first break. When we come back, we'll jump into Scott's top 150 hitters list this week. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with Scott Chu, our senior analyst, who always puts out the top 150 hitters for fantasy baseball. This week, week 15, article is out probably by the time you're listening to this. And we've got some interesting risers and fallers, Scott. We're going to jump right into the guys who have crept their way up the rankings this week. And we'll start in tier 4 with 20th overall ranked hitter, Otto Lopez in Miami, the middle infielder from the Marlins. I never thought that I would see the day where we had Otto Lopez as a top 20 hitter in the major leagues. Tell me why you ranked him so high.
Well, it's because he keeps doing that, right? He's been a top 10 hitter so far in the season. He's the top ranked second baseman. He's the second top ranked shortstop. And, you know, even just today here on Thursday, he had another game with a triple, a run, 2 RBI, 2 walks. The plate discipline is actually about the same, right? He's at his best in points leagues because he, you know, puts a ton of balls in play. The stolen bases are way up. He's already got 17. He's already got 60 runs scored. Like, he played 143 games last year and he had a 66 runs scored. He's at 91 games. He's already got 60. The home run numbers are up. Really, he's just, it's funny because like the barrel rate is roughly the same, right? It was 7.1% last year. It's 7.2% this year, but the hard hit rate is up. The batted ball profile did improve slightly. So it's like, it's fewer line drives. Like nothing about him, like prior to the season, nothing about him really jumped off the page. And that still remains the case. Like he does, he's really good at making contact, but he doesn't like, again, he doesn't hit the ball, you know, super duper hard. He's hitting it harder than ever before, 89.7 mile per hour exit velocity. But last year it was 88.5, you know, nothing like everything's kind of just moved up a bit incrementally, but it's the consistency that like this dude doesn't have really a bad week on the entire season, right? Like he's been maybe like replacement level for one or two weeks throughout the season, but I mean, it's just constant good stuff, you know? Like there was a brief bit in like mid to late May where he was below average, and maybe like a very short time at the end of April that he was below average, but otherwise he's been really, really up there. He almost never strikes out. Like his rolling, you know, 15 game strikeout rate recently is like 6 or 7%. Everything's in play. Everything's sort of generating action. He's hitting 345. And while that's a little bit lucky, it's not that, I mean, his expected batting average is 299. Everything is just there to be like, look, second base has problems. Consistency has been hard to find anywhere. And while there's nothing on the page that just jumps out that says, oh yeah, this guy is definitely like a total stud, he's on pace for about 15 to 18 home runs and close to 30 stolen bases. He's going to hit for a high average. He's doing it all right now. So it's hard not to just keep moving him up, especially again, when every single week is positive. In a league that's more and more with guys who are amazing for 3 weeks and then bad for 3 weeks, like a guy who's just always contributing in a positive way is really hard to find. And that's what Otto Lopez is doing.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like Francisco Lindor in a Marlins uniform right now. He's been outstanding. Let's move down the list a little bit to 40th overall, where it's another second baseman. We talk about how weak second base is. And here we have yet another second baseman in the top 40. It's Washington Nationals second base eligible first baseman, Luis Garcia Jr. He's up 10 spots this week. Scott, tell me why.
Yeah, and look, I think the first thing some people recognize about him is like, oh, he's a platoon guy. He sits against lefties. And it's true. He does. But he also has 20 home runs in 87 games. That's two more than he's ever hit in any single season. Yes, the stolen bases are down a whole bunch, but that's because he's hitting for power, right? The dude's slugging 572. There's not always bases to steal because he's constantly on second base and not first. Luis Garcia Jr., just even with the platoon, he's hitting the ball better and harder than ever before. He's also walking more. A big part of that is because pitchers are just like avoiding him a little more. They used to just throw pitches at him because they knew he was aggressive and he couldn't hit that hard. But like, he's hitting the ball 92.2 miles per hour on average so far this season. The hard hit rate is up to 47.8%. The expected stats are pretty much in line with what he's actually doing. There's, you know, his bat speed continue, like over the last 3 years, it's gone up by almost a mile per hour every single year. It's up to 73.6 miles per hour this year. That's quite a bit on the plus side. It's well above average. He's just hitting the ball a whole lot harder than he ever did before. He had always struck me as this very, like, you know, bat to ball contact guy who was more of a slap hitter that could sometimes hit some home runs. This dude looks like he's on pace to hit at least 30. Even if the home run play slows down, this is a guy who's going to finish with over 25 home runs, probably close to 100 RBI because the Washington Nationals are a top five offense right now. They continue to be that. That's something they've never been before, which, I mean, it just, again, it boggles the mind. And it's not even like, you know, a lot of the luck metrics, he's like been slightly lucky, but like his BABIP is still under 300. It's not like he's getting just a ton of luck out of nowhere. This dude is earning this high batting average. He's earning this power. And you know, the barrel rate continues to climb. You know, it's up over 10%. He's just doing it all. Yes, I talk a lot about home run fly ball rate, and it's double his career average right now. And that is something to be a little concerned about. But I'm a little less concerned because it's coming with a 2 mile per hour jump in average exit velocity, a 2% bump in hard hit rate. It's coming with all the stuff that would explain more home runs per fly ball, which more or less is hitting the ball a lot harder, right? More barrels, more hard hit balls, you know, every ball off the bat being harder. That will lead to more, you know, home runs per fly ball, right? So that's what's happening. So is there a little bit of luck there? Sure. Do I think he's going to come close to hitting 40 home runs? Absolutely not. But I think he's well on his way to 30, which still bakes in a lot of slowdown over the rest of the season. He's going to continue to hit above 275, if not 280, if he continues to hit the ball this hard. And in points leagues, he should go up even higher because he strikes out less than 20% of the time. So there's a lot to like about what Luis Garcia Jr. is doing right now. And if anyone's selling high or they don't like the fact he's a platoon, go ahead and go get him, especially if you get any kind of discount. I think this is definitely a top 50 hitter the rest of the way.
Yeah, who would have ever thought that the Washington Nationals would have three hitters in the top 40 of anybody's ranking list? And here you've got James Wood, CJ Abrams, and Luis Garcia Jr., all three raking, really carrying that offense in the nation's capital.
And don't forget about Curtis Meade. He's not in my top 50, but he continues to, he's available in a lot of leagues still. He still shows all of like these plus things that we've wanted out of Curtis Meade. He's been real, real good. And if anyone, like, I get a lot of comments about like, you know, are we still on with Curtis Meade? The answer is yes. Dalen Lyle, also a guy who's kind of gotten back to hitting. He had a really rough about month or so back in June, but he's turning things around right now. So if Dalen Lyle is on your wire, you should go get him. There's a lot, you know, there's a lot on the table in the Nationals batting order that's worth owning in fantasy, which again, boggles the mind to an extent, but go ahead and get him. I think the guy I'm almost the least confident in, I don't have a lot of confidence in Dylan Cruz. I think CJ Abrams might be a sell high because he continues to kind of overperform, even though he's been a top 20 bat. And the only reason I think he's a sell high is because I think you get a whole lot for him as he's been a top 10 hitter on the season, more or less, as someone who's like, he hasn't shown the same kinds of improvements as other guys have. It's like he's slightly improved with massively improved numbers. But all the rest, you know, you're definitely holding, especially James Wood being the most impressive for fixing these fairly serious and hard to handle issues he had with breaking balls. He just like spent one offseason being like, yeah, I'll figure this out. We wait years for guys to make any kind of improvement on breaking balls. James Wood improved in both contact ability, power, and decision making against breaking balls over the course of one offseason. After he spent the whole second half of last year being one of the worst regulars in baseball and being one of the very worst hitters against breaking balls, it's a total 180. It's absolutely amazing. And that's really the core of what these Nats are doing right now.
Well, let's move away from Washington. We'll move to the opposite coast. We'll look at the San Diego Padres outfielder, Jackson Merrill. Merrill ranked 73rd in your list, Scott, right smack in the middle of tier 8. He's up 14 spots this week. He's showing a lot more speed than I think we were expecting coming into this year. What else is going on with Jackson Merrill?
Well, he's still a bit below where he was to start the season, right? But a couple things have changed for him. Number one, he has shown some ability to hit for contact, hit for a little bit of power. He's hitting for speed. But more than anything else, he's made his way back to the top third of the order. So he had moved down to as low as like 8th or 9th earlier this season. Just earlier this week, like as of Monday, he was the number 6 hitter in this lineup. But over the last 3 games, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, he's gone up and moved to the number 2 spot in the order. Samad Taylor hitting the IL, who was a guy that was really just slapping speed anyway. The power was never really going to stick around. We talked about a little bit in the last episode. He hits the IL. That opens up again that 3 spot in the lineup for him. So the 2 spot, I should say. So Merrill's getting the job done of late. Again, he's still going to be a disappointment based on where you drafted him, but he should be a lot better than where we thought he'd be about a month ago, where he was just kind of clinging to the back 20 or 30 spots in the rankings. Now he's really solidified himself back in the top 100. Even if he's not going to reach the heights that we hoped for earlier this year, you already paid that price. That, you know, those dollars are gone. At least you're getting something very salvageable from him for the rest of the way.
We'll take a look at another young outfielder as we scroll down the list a little bit further. We go to tier 11, just outside the top 100. It's New York Mets outfielder AJ Ewing. He's up 30 spots, Scott. I assume that it's probably because he's taken over the leadoff spot in the Mets lineup, or at least partly because of that.
Oh, you're getting to know me so well, Brett. That's exactly what it is. This is the second Mets outfielder this year that's shot up rankings because he gets to bat in the leadoff spot. Carson Benj didn't end up moving down these ranks very much despite moving to fifth because he's still hitting and he should get more RBI opportunities, and he's going to hit, I think, fairly well. But AJ Ewing, lefty, he's now four games in a row batting in the leadoff spot. He did it again today. He had a hit and a run. He did strike out twice, but whatever. The strikeout rate has gotten a lot better for Ewing than where it was, I think, shortly after his original call-up, where it was kind of hovering in this 30% range. The walk rate continues to be in the double digits. The strikeout rate's down to like 15 to 17% over the last 2-3 weeks or so. Look, he doesn't like rip the cover off the ball necessarily. I still don't think this is going to be a guy. You know, he's hit a lot of home runs lately. I'm not sure how many of those stick around. So he's got five home runs since June 24th, which is awesome. Don't get me wrong. I just don't think that's the bit that's going to stick around. I think some of that is it's a little bit of good luck, a little bit of just being hot. Being hot isn't the same as being lucky. Being lucky is when you're hitting balls that really shouldn't produce results and they do. Being hot is hitting a lot more balls that produce results than we expect you to do long term, right? Like, you're hitting above your weight class, but it's not as though you're getting lucky. They're not just missing outfielder gloves or whatever, or finding just the right spot on the field. You just are hitting the ball better right now, right? But you're not going to keep doing that forever, and that's where I am with AJ Ewing. But the stolen bases should continue. He has been caught a couple times of late, but I think they should fix that a little bit. But he's got this bit of a blend between power and speed. I think he can hit 5 or 8 more home runs the rest of the season. Possibly it might be a little lower than that. He'll continue to steal bases. I think he can steal double digit bases the rest of the way and hit for a decent average as well. And again, hitting leadoff really puts his skills to their best use because he gets more chances to get plate appearances where he can get on first base and then try to steal second. It also just gives him more plate appearances at all, right? And he puts the ball in play a ton. So when he's hot and leading off, you get a lot more juice out of that than when he's hot and batting ninth, right? So he could fall a tier. He would fall a tier or two if he moved back down to like 6th or 7th the order, which is where he was like a week ago. But as of right now, batting first, he's gonna move up quite a bit and is someone who's above that sort of streaming outfield line. He's someone that we're looking at it with potential long-term sort of staying power on your roster.
We'll move down one spot on the list to 105 overall to Miami outfielder Kyle Stowers. Stowers provided the fireworks on July 4th weekend with 3 home runs in the series against the Athletics out in... Were they playing in Sacramento or Las Vegas? I'm not sure. Either way, in a rinky-dink park, he hit 3 home runs and then popped another one against the Mariners in Miami's home ballpark on Wednesday. Scott, other than the very recent home run streak, what are you liking about Stowers to raise him up your ranks 16 spots?
Yeah, so Stowers is hitting the ball extremely hard lately, right? So just... in sort of the second half of June, if you just go from June 20th on, his average exit velocity is 95.5 miles an hour. That means most balls are hard hit. So that's really exciting. Although it is, you know, his hard hit rate over this span is 68.4%. He is overperforming his Statcast a little bit. And I think a big chunk of that may have to do with the fact he did get those 4 games in Colorado, then 2 more games in Sacramento. That kept him from raising way, way up the ranks. But I'm starting to get comfortable with the idea that what Kyle Stowers is he's strike. I mean, he does get a lot of strikeouts, but he's a streaky lefty, right? Streaky power lefty, but he's got more power than most streaky power lefties, right? He is a guy who can hit you know, if he happened to be healthy for a full year, he is the type of guy that can hit 30 home runs. The problem is just, you know, he also is going to strike out a bunch. He's also not going to hit for a high average. I think that part of his numbers last year were a bit of a mirage. But while he's healthy, while he's swinging the bat hard, I think he's just someone you really ought to plug in as a power streamer. And, you know, just before we move on to anywhere else, I do want to talk about the feature of the list this week, which actually happens to be Garrett Mitchell. He ranks one spot right above both these guys. And he actually has a similar problem as Kyle Stowers, which is Garrett Mitchell is not good at making contact. He's abysmal at making contact, actually. But because he has so much power and so much speed, when he's seeing the ball well and making good decisions, taking walks, Garrett Mitchell can look like an absolute superstar in this league, which is kind of what he's done for the last 2 or 3 weeks or so. So Mitchell, I mean, he's hit a bunch of home runs. He's just absolutely smacking the ball. I mean, if you just go back to like towards the end of June, you go back to like June 29th or so, his average exit velocity is over 96 miles an hour. He's slugging 800 in these 38 plate appearances, which is over his last 11 games. In fact, if I made it just 10 games, it'd be slightly better just from June 30th. He's hitting the ball like crazy. And I move him far up because I do think you need to chase like the stolen bases and you need to chase the power. The walk rate's great. So if you're in an OBP league, there's a bit higher of a floor. But you also have to remember that these guys who struggle with contact are extremely streaky, right? This is what we see at the top end. This is what we see with Nick Kurtz. It's what we see with Rafael Devers. And on the bottom end, we see it with guys like Stowers and Mitchell, right? They just struggle with making contact. So they are really, really streaky. But when the getting's good, you should go get it. Because when these guys are hitting, they are setting the world on fire, right? Because they just swing so hard and put so much power on the ball. So you should go get them now. I'm not saying you're going to necessarily keep these guys all the way. They didn't quite make it into the top 100, et cetera, et cetera. But while they're hot, I think you absolutely need to scoop them and get every little bit of juice that you can out of these hot, hard-hitting bats.
Well, speaking of hot bats, there's one more guy that I wanted to discuss before we move on to the fallers, and that's Kansas City's Tyler Tolbert. Tolbert, fantasy irrelevant until maybe 3 or 4 days ago when he put together back-to-back five-hit games. We're not falling for this, right, Scott?
Yeah, so Tolbert's a righty. He's gotten the Royals have played a ton of lefties of late, right? So Tolbert's only played against one in the last five righties. So when that schedule balances out, he's really not going to get quite as many looks. But he is, you know, he's obviously hitting well over the last couple of games. It's really these back-to-back five-hit games that shoot him way up. Like you're, you know, if you're on your looking at your waiver wire and you're like, hey, who's been the best over the last 15 days? It's going to show you a dude with 10 hits in 11 plate appearances. But I think there's something really important to call out about that. And while, you know, expected stats aren't necessarily perfect and they don't stabilize immediately, it's really important to note that this dude had 10 hits, including two home runs. Do you want to take a guess as to what his average exit velocity was during those two games? And just again, in context, he hit 909 with a 1545 slug, right? A 606 WRC plus. These are breaking numbers because it's only over two games. He had two home runs, a double on 10 total hits with 7 runs scored, 4 RBI, and he stole a base. What do you think Tyler Tolbert's average exit velocity was in these two games?
91.
Try 81.9. For context, that is pitcher power. When pitchers hit, this is roughly how hard they hit the ball on average, right? And of these, again, we've got 10 batted balls here, and on average, they went about as hard as a pitcher would hit the ball. So if you're looking for a luck stat, there it is, right? Like, yeah, his expected stats would have been fine over the span, but they're literally like a third of what his actual stats are. And it gets weird. He had one barrel. Of these 10 hits, one of them was a barrel, right? Which is fine in terms of an overall rate, but like, it's not like these, it's not like he was just absolutely crushing the ball everywhere. It's a he hit three hard hit balls. Two of them were home runs, right? That's an insane sort of like carryover, right? So there's not a lot to really get behind here. I think very, very deep leagues, you can, you know, scoop Tolbert to see what it is, but this is a 28-year-old making, you know, he's only had a little bit of time in the major leagues. I think he can hit for average, probably. We saw him do that for a little bit last season, but there's not any real power here to speak of. This is very, very fluky stuff going on with Tyler Tolbert. And every time I keep saying this, I just keep thinking about Mike Tolbert, who's power. That was power, right? This Tyler Tolbert, it's not that kind of power. Don't get the two confused.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk fallers on Scott's top 150 hitters list after this. Welcome back to Hacks and Jacks. I'm your host, Brett Ford, here with senior analyst Scott Chu, talking hitters on pitcher list. We're looking
and at Mike Tolbert.
We're talking
Mike Tolbert.
Yeah. And, you know, the list of things it takes to be a Pro Bowl NFL running back. Mike Tolbert, 5'8", 245. Yeah, I'm like, you know, 15, 20 pounds
basically
away.
There. Basically, yeah. I don't know what you're doing wasting time on this podcast. What are we thinking?
You're
an all-pro fullback ready to go.
I should be out there acquiring mass.
Yeah. You certainly won't shatter every bone in your body.
Not that I need help doing that. Seriously. let's take a look at the fallers this week, Scott. And unfortunately, we've got one of our favorite names first on the show sheet. Seattle first baseman Josh Naylor has fallen 15 spots, 77th overall. Still a top 100 hitter. Still way better than Cam Smith, who I acquired him for early in the season. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. What's going on with Josh Naylor?
Yeah, he's just not hitting, right? So he is still hitting in a decent spot in the order. He's moved down ever so slightly. He's heading fifth right now when previously, and it's not even like he's hitting like so bad that he's unrosterable. It's just, he's been like below average. And that's annoying. So, I mean, he did, on the other hand, one part of his game is still working. He stole two more bases today. Josh Naylor is now at 18 stolen bases through 87 games. That bit's still going. He's one of the premier speed threats in the American League, right? Like, you want to talk about 240 pounds? This man's 5'10", 235. Still remains one of the premier speed threats in terms of stolen bases here in the American League. And that's keeping his value afloat. It makes him worth rostering. And in points leagues, you're getting some benefit because he doesn't strike out much. He puts a ton of balls in play. But the power just continues to be a little bit behind the eight ball. The biggest thing for Josh Naylor is the counting stats are way down, right? Like, he's only at 36 RBI, 33 runs scored at this point in the season. That's way down from, you know, three straight seasons of 90 plus RBI, back-to-back seasons of 80 plus runs scored. He's going to fall way short of both of those metrics. And on one hand, some of that comes from the fact he's not hitting quite as well, especially in the power department. The power hasn't really been there. On the other hand, though, a lot of that isn't really his fault, right? Like, he's not hitting the ball that much weaker. He's got a little bit of bad luck on batting average. It should probably be about 20 points higher. A little bit of bad luck on, you know, power, but it'd still probably be a sub 400 slug. But in reality, he should have better counting stats. It's not really his fault that the Seattle Mariners as a whole are not scoring runs the way they did last season. So it's kind of a hard thing to balance overall. He's still very much a guy you need to keep rostered. He might be a fun little buy low if you think the Mariners can kind of turn their offense around. You know, if Cal Raleigh starts hitting in this lineup, I think that changes a lot of things for them, because right now the lineup has been like the fighting Randy Arozarenas with occasional contributions from like Dominic Canzone. But, you know, otherwise, like, this team just doesn't hit right now. So if they get one or two other guys hitting plus Naylor, I think it looks a lot different. But in the meantime, he continues to slide down the ranks, but continues to be a guy you got to hold, especially if you need steals, because our boy Josh Naylor still steals bases. That was the thing. I mean, right off the bat, when I ranked him so high in the preseason, my big thing was like, I think he can keep hitting for power and average, which he hasn't done. And I also thought all the projections were wrong on the fact that he would stop stealing bases. And at least I got that bit right. He's definitely still a base stealer. He's a premier base stealer in the American League, even though he's kind of a short, pudgy guy, but you know, he brings that husky energy to the base paths, and he's going to continue to steal bases. He should clear 30 no problem this season. I shouldn't say no problem. It's going to be pretty tight, but I think he'll still clear 30.
Ronald Acuna, Bobby Witt Jr., Jose Ramirez, Trey Turner, Julio Rodriguez. Those are the only five active players to achieve 30 stolen bases in back-to-back seasons. Josh Naylor is on pace to join that exclusive club.
With second percentile sprint speed.
I love that. I love that.
And 100th percentile guile, right? Like, that's how this works.
Just sheer grit and determination and husky energy. We'll keep the husky energy going on Josh Naylor's behalf. And move on to Bryson Stott, who has dropped 16 spots. He's down in tier 10, 97th overall. Scott, the Philadelphia second baseman, really struggling at the plate. Kind of rose back up the list after a couple down weeks, but now he's fallen again.
Yeah, he had a hot little streak. I mean, he had a pretty good June, but towards the end of it, yeah, you know, the power is really kind of what's fallen apart. He has just one extra base hit since June 25th, and you know, second base isn't deep. So, like, especially in a deeper league, you don't really have a choice but to keep rolling him out there. And he is hitting for average. He's hitting .265 with a .339 OBP and a .306 slug over his last 56 plate appearances. Like, his slug is 33 points lower than his OBP. Yeah, he's just not hitting the ball very hard, really relying on runs scored. He did hit fourth just the other day, which I kind of blew my mind. He went back down to sixth. You know, on Wednesday he hit fourth, but today on Thursday he was back to sixth. But he's still hitting in this okay spot in the lineup, and this team is scoring some runs, so he continues to be like fairly useful as a second baseman, but it is worth noting that, like, in shallower leagues, you might start looking around to see what else is out there, because he doesn't bring a ton to the table unless you really need speed. He still steals bases. He should get to 25 this year, but when he struggles, the Phillies have a tendency to platoon Bryson Stott. So that's the other thing to keep an eye on.
We'll move further down the list. You touched on this this player a little bit earlier in the podcast, but we're going to talk a little bit more about New York Yankees first baseman Paul Goldschmidt, down 23 spots to 112 in the list. What's going on with Goldschmidt, and why is he falling?
Well, eventually, when you're really overperforming your expected stats, things will sort of correct themselves. They just don't usually do it quite this hard. But, you know, I had been saying to people, like, hey, look, what he's doing isn't sustainable. Paul Goldschmidt is not hitting the ball very well, but he's getting a ton of results. This eventually is going to kind of crash out. And I knew that was true. I just didn't think it would happen quite like this. He's 0 for his last 34 coming into Thursday's action, with a 42.9% strikeout rate and one walk. So it's just been really, really ugly for Paul Goldschmidt. Nothing is really working at all. And he's lost a ton of playing time. So he sat against three of the last four righties. He did start against the two lefties, but the Yankees have really pulled back on Goldschmidt, having seen some of the luster sort of fade from, you know, whatever he was doing to continually outperform his expected stats. So in a shallow league, I'm totally fine with cutting bait, depending on what's out there at first base. First base does have some depth, and I think there might be options for you out there. This is not necessarily, I mean, I wasn't that big of a believer in Paul Goldschmidt before he got hot. And now that the heat is over, I'm kind of less of a believer, thinking that, you know, this just isn't something that was ever going to be sustainable. And so if, you know, I doubt Ryan O'Hearn is still out there after that massive game, but I'd rather have Ryan O'Hearn. I'd rather have Cody Clemens, Kyle Stowers, who we already talked about. Josh Bell might still be out there. Jacob Gonzalez for the White Sox, I'd be very willing to kind of jump on in a shallower league, because we're already in this replacement kind of, we're starting to get into this replacement space. And so, you know, Curtis Mead, who I talked about before, I definitely want that. I think where I draw the line is Spencer Torkelson's been hitting a little bit well lately, and I don't think I'm ready to make that move quite yet, unless it's maybe OBP. because Torkelson has been better in that particular format, but well, he's been better than he would have otherwise in that format. But yeah, Paul Goldschmidt sliding down, and I wouldn't be shocked if he slides down again, just because that hot streak wasn't like him finding himself. It was just a lot of really good fortune on batted balls, being an average to a slightly above average hitter and getting elite results.
We'll stay in the AL East for our next faller. We'll head to Toronto, where outfielder Dalton Varsho has fallen 22 spots, down to 131 on the list. Varsho missed a lot of the season with injury, came back, and now he's starting to tumble down your list, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, he just continues to be a really streaky hitter. Dalton Varsho, you know, all the performance comes in waves. He hasn't hit a home run since June 23rd. And yeah, there was a stretch of time where he was kind of really hot and he looked really good. And now he's really cold. And Dalton Varsho doesn't do enough to force me to say like, yeah, you have to roster this guy all year, especially because since May 1st, he's only got 3 home runs, right? Yeah. Like I know he missed a bunch of June. He missed like 2 weeks in June, but he's not hitting the ball very hard. He does steal some bases, but this is like a 15 team back end outfielder. And in 12 teamers, I think there's plenty of other outfielders out there that you can just kind of chase to see what happens. There's no need to hold on to Varsho just to see when he might heat up, because he'll probably just sit around on your wire until he does anyway. So, I mean, if you're looking at your waiver wire right now, again, Cody Clemens, a guy who's probably been scooped up in most places, but Esmerin Valdez, who has massive contact issues, but continues to hit some home runs, he's interesting. In a points league, Javier Sanoja over in Miami, he's eligible at second, third, and outfield. He doesn't hit for a ton of power, but he can kind of like smack the ball around and score points in some spurts. Elliot Ramos over in San Francisco, who just came off the IL, he's hit a couple home runs. He's a streaky power hitting outfielder, but you know he's probably worth a look if he's kind of just been floating around. Cedric Mullins has been stealing some bases and hitting for power. He doesn't hit for average, but there's still something there. I think you could absolutely take a look that way. There's a lot of options in the outfield. You know, even Heriberto Hernandez for Miami, who's kind of this super streaky right-handed bat who mostly only gets actions against lefties, but he hits the ball really hard when he does. You've got Jake Mangum, who's going to continue to play a ton for the Pirates now that Connor Griffin is on the IL. He doesn't hit for very much power, but if you need batting average and stolen bases, Jake Mangum can do that. Again, just an embarrassment of riches in the outfield that make it so you don't need to wait for Dalton Varsho to heat back up.
And before we wrap up, I wanted to touch on a couple of guys who have fallen off the list. And, you know, these are guys that we embarrassingly may have invested some draft capital in. And that's outfielders Jacob Marcy and Jarren Duran. Both of them aren't even considered top 150 hitters anymore, Scott. And it's sad to see, but I mean, they're cuts. They've been cuts for several weeks now. You're not scooping one of these guys thinking that there might be a bounce back after the All-Star break, are you?
No. So Marcy, I think the biggest thing is he's been so inefficient on the base paths. So he's got 18 stolen bases, but he's been caught 10 times. So he's 18 for 28, and that's just not going to get it done. And while I never expected him to hit for a ton of power on the way, you know, coming back, I did think he could continue to hit towards the top of this lineup and steal bases and provide something, but he's just not getting it done. The OBP is fine, but the slug is under 300. The average is under 200. He just can't do it. So Marcy, he's a speed streamer at best if the matchups look really, really good. You know, there's a couple of guys who have sort of fallen off entirely that I don't think any of them are really like exciting me. So Austin Riley is probably the biggest name, probably the guy that was drafted earliest that's fallen off. Other guys close to falling off would be Eugenio Suarez, Salvador Perez. They're actually 149 and 150. Willy Adames is 147. A lot of these guys, I can't sit here and tell you that I think there's going to be a bounce back, because I've been horribly patient keeping these guys on the list for even as long as I did. And at this point, it's kind of like, look, they're well below the spot in a 12 team league where you have to hold them. Right. That really starts honestly, like around ranks like 124 in a 12 team league. You can even basically outside the top 100 in a 10 team league, you can start kind of thinking whether or not you have to hold this guy. You get past like 120 to 125 in a 12 team league, you can start thinking like, I could totally swap one of these guys for someone who's hot or maybe who fits my needs a little bit better. So, I get asked a lot, like, who do I think is going to break out in the second half? That's a really hard question to answer because it's like, who's going to start doing stuff that they're not doing right now? Maybe sometimes I can, I don't want to say I can predict, but sometimes I'll look at guys who maybe had a really bad month or so in terms of like expected results were really good, but actual results were less good. So, I mean, an easy example of that was like a Miguel Vargas, where I was like, look, he's still hitting the ball just as good as he did when he was hot, but the results aren't as good right now. Just keep staying the course. He'll turn it around. So that was an easy one. Like Miguel Vargas, you know, did end up turning around and it worked out great, but there's not a ton of names that jump out. I mean, Julio Rodriguez has had a lot of bad luck in terms of like his expected stats versus his actual stats. So maybe he can turn it around a little bit, but it's not like you're scooping up Julio Rodriguez off the wire. You're talking about guys like to maybe try to get off the wire. Brandon Nimmo is hitting a lot better than his actual stats sort of suggest. And he did just fall again on the list because he's an outfielder and you don't need a lot of patience, but he's someone that I think could bounce back pretty good. Casey Schmidt has been extremely unlucky over the last month or so in terms of expected stats versus actual. It's like an 80-point difference. So if Casey Schmidt's out there on your wire, he should at least be on kind of your watch list, if not scooping, just to cover some extra positions. I think he could maybe kind of pull some things around for you. But otherwise, again, it's hard to just say like, oh, this is definitely going to be a breakout or something like that. But yeah, Brandon Nimmo and Casey Schmidt are probably the best examples I can think of guys who should have like a slug that's 100 points higher than it is today. Dylan Cruz has been a little unlucky, both in batting average and slug. I'm not a huge fan of his skill set overall, but if you're looking for a lotto ticket in a deep league, I think Dylan Cruz has shown that he can be better than what he's been so far. He can be like a solid player, even though the expected stat or even though the actual stats have been pretty bad. But that's probably the extent of it at the moment. I don't see a whole lot more bad luck just jumping out at me. I think the only other name I'd say as a breakout who I continue to rank well, I think there's more to Curtis Meade. He just continues to show all three skills. I think there might be a breakout heading there too. So if someone's getting bored of Curtis Meade, I think you can grab him. The next set of kind of guys that might break out is if they fix a skill, right? Like right now, JJ Bleda is not hitting for any kind of contact, but he's done it before this season. And if JJ Bleda finds that contact ability again, he can go back to being a top 60, top 75 hitter, no problem, where he's looked a lot worse than that lately. So if he can turn that around, I think that could be a big difference maker in terms of what to expect. But I don't have a Samuel Basalo has been pretty unlucky in the power department. The batting average isn't going to be good, but I think, you know, there is a way that he maybe improves his contact a little bit and breaks out from a power perspective. But yeah, I think that's probably it for the moment. I just don't see a lot of other names that jump out. It's like, oh, this guy should be a whole lot better than he is, but those guys do have potential.
Excellent. Well, Scott, thank you so much for another rundown through this week's list. Scott's release will be, by the time this podcast is posted, probably should be ready to rock and roll for another week of the top 150 hitters list. Scott, tell the people where to find you and your work outside of the top 150 hitters list.
Yeah. So otherwise, obviously there's this podcast that comes out, but on Fridays, we've got the Reddit AMA that'll start around midday, sometime between 12 and 1. You'll be able to check that out. So go ahead and give that a look. And if you are in the Discord, if you're in the Pitcherless Discord, I am answering questions every moment that I can. I do that. If you want a taste of that in the Reddit AMA, that's the kind of insight you get in our Discord every single day, if you want to ask me questions every single day. So again, I'm not trying to put the hard sales pitch on it, but if you want that kind of feedback on a daily basis, the Discord's a great place to get it. You get it from me, you get it from others. If you want to talk about pitching, you can talk about pitching. I won't help you with that, but somebody will, presumably, on the staff. So that's the other great place to look. But yeah, I'm kind of all in on pitcher lists. So yeah, the Reddit AMA on Fridays, the pitcher list or the hitter list, which usually comes out on Thursdays. I've just been killed at work the last couple of weeks. So it's going to come out early Friday. The ranking bits are done. If you're a PL Pro, you'd see them already. That's where Brett is kind of getting this reference from. But otherwise, they will be out Friday morning. And yeah, so feel free to reach out. Ask any questions you've got. I'm still here talking hitters, even as people talk about football, Brett.
As it's a great segue, because you can find me at Fade That Man on Twitter and all the socials. In addition to the Hacks and Jacks podcast and my work on Pitcher List, I am also working on the fantasy football sister site, QB List. Fantasy football season is almost to the point where we can say it's kicking off. Draft prep season, very exciting time where nobody's wrong yet, which is nice. Check us out on QBList.com. Check me out on the QB List podcast network with my buddy Jay Felicio. And check me out in the Discord. Hit me up with any questions about hitters. You're probably better off asking Scott, but you can ask me my opinion too. That's fine. You can ask me football questions too. So make sure to find me in all those places.
Number one sleeper, Mike Tolbert. Just keep it in mind, folks. Mike Tolbert.
Mike Tolbert, baby. 5'8", 245.
He's been retired for well over 8 years, but sleeper.
So oh, yeah.
He'll be cheap on draft day. He'll be cheap.
Oh, yes. Well, that wraps up another week of Hacks and Jacks. For Scott, I'm Brett. Thanks for tuning in. See you later.